Because what we're talking about with hemp is very close to where coffee is now. Yeah. We're heading towards a price compression, and I believe with the, as you were just describing, Bob, with all the ubiquity of distribution everywhere of these products, it does behave like a CPG business.
Back at Benzinga.
He says, Bob, listening in on a conversation. Really, really quiet. You kind of just sit in the background. I said, I know. I don't have to do that shit anymore.
I remember the other Bob Hoban hour.
So we are at Benzinga 2024, meeting some of the fantastic people, catching up with old friends like Bob Hoban. I have a co-host for this podcast.
Mark Collins from Highly Capitalized Network. Happy to be here with Dimitri.
So the Highly Capitalized Network is a great place to learn about cannabis. So, Mark, thank you for joining us today. We have the pleasure of co-interviewing a legend.
A legend, indeed.
It's almost like you're almost like a noun. What is that? You're like people just.
Yeah.
The name Bob, you know.
I'd say Hoban.
Hoban, yeah.
Maybe Hoban.
Everybody knows
Hoban
him.
Hour.
There's only one Bob. There's only one Hoban.
Yeah.
There's only one great cannabis lawyer.
I go to conferences and I just say, "Is Hoban here?" And everybody knows it's Bob.
I drop his name, you know, everywhere.
I try to do it as much as I can. Like, I'm trying to associate myself with the Bob Hoban brand as much as I can.
So for our audience who doesn't know who you are, can you just introduce yourself quickly?
My name is Hoban. I've been a cannabis lawyer in this space and a thought leader, if you will, for a couple of decades now, and really proud of all the work I've done. But on March 1st of this year, I stepped back from the day-to-day practice of law. I've done just about everything you can do as a lawyer. Won big cases, lost big cases, did big deals, built a firm, sold a firm, led a firm, built different groups, and my group at Clark Hill was well awarded last year as a result of our hard work over the first couple of years. And
Cannabis Industry Lawyers of the Year, I think.
Yes.
That's
and,
right. Big deal.
Benzinga and with the MJ Award. So we were proud of that. And it just it seemed like it was time for me to take a step back, let the others step up, and transition away from being a lawyer. I've done it all.
So in 1 or 2 minutes, can you summarize your history of cannabis when you first started, like in high school?
It's a great story. No, cannabis and I have always had a close personal relationship through music, through counterculture. I'm a Grateful Dead fan. When I had an opportunity after law school to actually get into cannabis as a lawyer, and not be a criminal lawyer. Not that there's anything wrong with criminal defense lawyers. I just never worked in criminal law. But to be able to apply my skills to a new industry, to look at what was coming next and always just be in the forefront of things, it was really, really great. In many ways, I helped crack open the CBD industry, helped define the hemp industry, opened up many of the first dispensaries in multiple states, was the first cannabis professor at the University of Denver. I've written legislation for 35 countries around the world. I mean,
countries.
Like I said, I've done it. I've done so much of it, and I'm so proud of that work, and
yes,
so lucky to have worked with all the people in the industry and you know, get to know good friends like you guys. But as I come here sort of on the other side of that, I feel less of a need to go out and say hello to every single person and to check in and be that enthusiastic person. And it's kind of nice to sit back, just watch it all transpire.
The Godfather. That's what that's what we'll say. You know, I'm glad you brought up Grateful Dead, because that always triggers in my head. I'm always seeing metaphors and listening to music. So I'm hearing that the dog has not been fed in years. It's even worse than it appears, but it's all right. You know,
it's all right.
It's all
that's
right.
Right.
It's all right. Right. I love that song. I love the Grateful Dead. So, getting that song out of my head. So what's next? March, you're retiring from the firm?
No, on March 1st, I am no longer a practicing lawyer. I still am affiliated with Clark Hill. I still am the special advisor to their cannabis industry group, and try to provide some mentorship and business development work for the team there that I left behind and that they continue to build on top of. They're in really good hands with Sander and Craig and the rest of that team.
Yes.
Really proud of them all. But, you know, at the same time, I was done with the grind. I took practicing law to a Bill Belichick-like system.
Yes.
Where it was intense, it was high volume, it was a lot of people working all the time, and it worked really, really hard. It worked really, really well. We worked really, really hard. And I think I'm I know I'm ready to put that chapter behind me. I've got a book I'm writing.
Okay,
I've
got a book coming.
Got a book coming. Working in the cannabis or the cannabis beverage space pretty deeply right now. I believe in that as really the bridge to legalization. Working with my company, C-Trust, which is a credit rating company in the cannabis space.
Oh, and I love that concept. We need to talk a little bit about that. But the beverage concept.
Yeah, beverages.
Are you starting Hoban Beverages? Beverages?
And by the way, I'd be much more talkative now, but there's so many CBD beverages here just being given away that I'm practically speechless because I'm so high in CBD.
There's a great opportunity in that space. I mean, we worked really hard to get our clients into NBA arenas, NHL arenas, festival circuits, thousands of liquor stores across the country with both hemp-derived D9 and then advising cannabis or marijuana-derived beverages within the closed-loop state systems, how they can create a beverage that exists outside of those state-loop systems. Some of the biggest brands in the country we've worked with as lawyers and advisors over the years, and now I get to take on a different role working with them, working with large distributors across the country, and really, I think, paving a pathway towards what's the inevitable. This is the tail that sticks out of the closed loop system and gets into the mainstream. It's sellable. There's no interference from the marijuana side because they don't really have great experiences selling beverages in dispensaries. There's not a lot of interference with the hemp side when you talk about, you know, what's happening in many of those things with the D8s and the CBD and certainly the fiber people. This is a lane that aggregates both, doesn't take away from either, and really is the way to pave it. And it's all federally legal right now. And guess what? The interest behind it are the most influential people in the country in terms of those types of consumer packaged goods, and they always get their way, and this will be no different, mark my words.
So do you think that...
I'm like thinking to myself, I'm going to be working for him in some next project soon.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm feeling inspired.
When I look at the Delta 9 and the hemp, the farm bill, you know, frankly, cannabis is legal in the United States. I mean, we've seen the end of prohibition, kinda, with the hemp. What do you think, Bob?
Certainly. I mean, look, you've got federal legalization. You, in the worst case scenario, I would look at it as being halfway to full legalization. But somehow, some way, the hemp stuff gets maligned. It gets brushed aside. There's a lot of confusion about the processes. There's a lot of confusion about what's synthetic or converted versus what's naturally occurring. That supply chain is maligned because it's not tightly regulated like the marijuana system. But 17 states have been involved in most of those states, have enacted affirmative regulations over those types of products. So they are regulated for sales. The state of Florida is actually an interesting test case.
Because, help us understand the competition, so to speak, the conflict, the issue that's happening in Florida right now. It's also kind of happening in Arizona.
Yeah. It's happening in many jurisdictions. So, there, you know, it's been dubbed a civil war.
I'm going to see if you can help us understand it without picking a side.
I don't take a side because I've worked equally in the hemp sector and the marijuana sector my entire career, and I'm a big supporter of both. I just think that I wrote an article that said, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. The farm bill is the greatest gift that the industry's ever gotten, and somehow we tend to ignore it. So what's happening in Florida is that most MSOs had taken a position a couple of years ago that this stuff, whether it's Delta 8, Delta 9, intoxicating compounds, for lack of a better way to put it, from the hemp plant, that those products are all made in bathtubs and it's unsafe and that they shouldn't be permitted in the marketplace, despite the fact that it's being federally legal. That's an interesting juxtaposition. A federally illegal industry saying you shouldn't let federally legal things be sold. I don't know how that works, but that's what we were seeing. Now, I understand protectionism, but most of those MSOs had shifted their mindset over the last year and a half or so. They saw the legality. They didn't just hear it from me. They went and talked to their own lawyers. They looked at mainstream distribution outlets, and they understood that they needed to create that infrastructure for those types of products. And so they've done that, and many of them do it quietly. Now, Trulieve is an example that they are fighting against it vehemently.
Right.
I understand Curaleaf is in that mix as well, but again, I haven't seen dollars, I haven't seen numbers, I'm not in the rooms with these people, but this is the public appearance that they would like to see those things shut down. Florida is the test case for that. We have an adult use ballot measure coming up at the end of this year here in Florida, which I believe, based on what I read this morning, is not polling very well. which is surprising to me, considering the state and the historical preference towards legalization.
Sure.
Then you've got this bill that was passed out of the legislature, which said no Delta 8, no converted compounds, and you can have 5 milligram and 50 milligram THC products in the marketplace if it's derived from the closed or the licensed or regulated hemp system. By the way, that fits beautifully for hemp-derived beverages for D9, 5 milligrams, 50 milligrams per package. And then there's an effort now to veto or have DeSantis veto that legislation, kick it to a special session where they would debate how does the marijuana sector and the forthcoming, you know, at least possibility of adult use work with the hemp sector. And you've got an interesting Republican governor who likes small business, who likes numbers, and he's a bit of a policy wonk. And even if you don't like his politics, I do think he's discerning. He looks at the numbers. He understands that the billions of dollars worth of hemp-derived marketplace in this state and the jobs and the infrastructure, you don't want that to go away. And then he publicly calls the True Leaves of the world the legal cartel. So I don't know what's going to happen politically, but it's a fascinating test case here in Florida, because if it doesn't get vetoed, then you'll have more opposition for the ballot measure in November. If it does get vetoed, then at least there's a chance to sort out how these things could stand side by side. And they're very different. We're talking low-dose, over-the-counter products, 2 and 4 and 5 milligrams, versus 10, 15, 25, 40 milligrams, or even 100 that you can buy in a dispensary, depending on whether it's a medical system or an adult system. So all of those things shake out. And again, who's the big winner in all of this? Every day and twice on Sunday, the cannabis beverage products. We've heard about it for years. It's coming. It's coming. It's the next next phase. We've never had that traction. I mean, there's great companies like Can and Keef. Keef is far and away the industry leader. Proud to say that they've been a longtime client, great friends, and a great Colorado company. They've been far and away the leader in the marijuana-derived sector, but are they going to pivot to the hemp space? That's what they're contemplating right now. Many companies have. But who knows? Who knows where that goes? But it's interesting to see it finally develop in lawful channels. NBA arenas, NHL arenas, festivals, liquor stores all over the country. That's the future. And if you get that door cracked open, guess what's behind it? Gummies, low-dose vapes, low-dose everything. That's the future. And what's wrong with selling more things in more places? That's what I don't understand.
Well, they wanted to sell it themselves. That's protectionist.
It is protectionist.
And I was told by a lobbyist who was involved at that level that the milligram, they wanted to introduce the milligram thing in Arizona as like a ticking time bomb to make sure the hemp industry couldn't function. That's like what was like the intent of one of the lobbyists from Trulieve when they came up that. And I mean,
I'd like to talk about that a bit, Bob. Trulieve and their support of the ballot initiative currently.
Yeah.
So
$15 million.
I find it odd that a pro-business Republican like DeSantis is saying they're a legal cartel. He's acting quite hostile towards them. Could you give us any color on what's going on there? And is he just trying to make sure that the little guys are being looked after? Or what's his policy?
I mean, look, DeSantis, obviously, we all know he made a run for the presidential nomination. Part of that requires you to embrace these sort of broader and sometimes more divisive Republican positions.
Yeah.
One of those Republican positions that he's embraced has been anti-marijuana, anti-cannabis. What's the inside information there? I think that he's going to look at the numbers very closely. He's going to want both industries to exist side by side like we all do. It's just where you got to pick your distribution points. You got to pick your set of regulations. It does not make sense to take a low-dose hemp-derived product and run it through a strict marijuana on a licensing system with overtaxation and overregulation. That was the deal we made to get these products into the marketplace at the very beginning, at the end of Prohibition, in the strictly medical marijuana days.
I preach this all the time.
That was the
deal.
This
was a compromise that we made with the Fuddy Duddies to legalize these limited licensing, these licensing structures, this very strict regulatory structure. It was actually invented by, maybe you were at the table as well, but it's guys at the MPP who were very smart about creating this policy position that the opponents of legalization couldn't beat people over the head with.
Right.
But what's your position, though, Bob, on the whole descheduling, rescheduling? Because a lot of people are saying even considering rescheduling as a stepping stone, which is what my friend Sander Zagrzebski would advocate.
Yeah.
It's like, let's take the win and get ahead on to the most important one, which is descheduling. Because what we're talking about with hemp is very close to where coffee is now.
Yeah.
We're heading towards a price compression. And I believe with the, as you were just describing, Bob, with all the ubiquity of distribution everywhere of these products, it does behave like a CPG business, and it doesn't. And in CPG businesses, you have competitive dynamics which reduce prices.
Well, think about it this way. Think about hotels. There's licensed public places of accommodation, and there's Airbnbs. There's licensed taxis, and then there's Ubers. There is a tightly regulated and an unregulated example in so many things that service individuals. The unique thing is this happens to be consumer products. So when you think about rescheduling, descheduling was never a possibility because it requires requires political will, which means legislative momentum. Alcohol and tobacco are descheduled because they had Congress's attention at the end of Prohibition when that stuff moved forward. Mm-hmm. We don't have anyone's attention. There are many people working on the Hill in Washington, D.C., working very hard. Safira Galoob's one of the leaders and the champions there. But the rest of the folks, I just don't think are particularly influential. I don't think they're particularly forward-thinking. But they're also, even if they're really smart and thoughtful about policy, you get trapped in a box. You get trapped in a box saying, yeah, here's where it's going to go. We'd like to proscribe how these things are going to happen for 10 years. But you need one win, which you've never, ever gotten at the federal level, really, one significant win.
So that's a stepping stone strategy.
So it's a stepping stone.
Yeah.
And then as it becomes – so if you get to Schedule 3 and you fix banking or access to capital markets, then the big players will come in. That's not going to make a lot of the people in this room very happy because those people have more money, they have more experience, they have access to shelf space and political clout. So it's be careful what you ask for type of scenario. But as that moves forward, that will create more mainstream support from the political, from Congress to look at potentially descheduling. But it's already descheduled when we're talking about industrial hemp derivatives. Yeah. The USDA put out a memo in 2019 and it said that even THC from hemp is no longer a controlled substance. Not limited to the 0.3%, only in the plant. Doesn't mean you can't concentrate it. That's where the states have filled the void. So we have this, some people call it a loophole, some people call it ambiguity, vagueness. As a lawyer, you're trained to recognize a loophole when you see one. And it's not a loophole if there are 3 to 6 sentences that are explicitly clear about what's legal from the plant, and that contains every possible derivative and compound derived therefrom, including THC. So my point being is it's an interesting time. I'm a big supporter of both sectors. I call the marijuana sector because that's legally correct, and the hemp sector, I think they're both two sectors within the so-called cannabis industry. To call the marijuana sector the cannabis industry just rubs me the wrong way because it's just wrong, but I understand that the history and I understand that nomenclature does matter because of some of the prohibitionist and the racist and xenophobic rhetoric we heard in the past.
I tend to agree. I mean, look, we have to call it something. Cannabis is everything. Cannabis sativa L. I think marijuana is widely recognized to be the prohibited one.
I use marijuana because if you're talking to a fuddy-duddy or, you know, conservative Republican, call it whoever you want, and you enter the conversation with the phrase cannabis, they think you're trying to spin them with some language change. If you just approach with the phrase marijuana, they know what you're talking about.
Yeah, you're in their shoes.
And in their mind, they're not saying, I'm going to call it marijuana because I don't like Mexicans. It's just what they call it.
Yeah, speaking their language. They don't even think about the racism.
Nope. Yeah.
See, but this is it. I cannot.
Can you find me one person that uses the term marijuana racistly?
I can't actually write the word marijuana now myself because I know it's so loaded with all the...
Yeah, it's tough because we're in the industry, but we got to...
Yeah, yeah, I understand. No, yeah, I totally agree, Dimitri. I think it's very wise to meet people at their speech and use their language, of course.
I want to go back to something that Bob's talking about because, Bob, you are like one of the senior statesmen, the godfather, the thought leaders in this industry. And it bothers me to no end. You know, I don't need or want a lot of things in this life. I'm a pretty happy guy. But I understand that there's systems, there's structures, there's institutions, there's legacy that exists long beyond us 50 years from now. And it bothers me when I see people who claim to be in this industry and claim to support this plant turn on it. You know what I'm saying? And try to push for more regulations and more laws that are against the interests of freedom
and
access.
What happened to freedom?
Yeah.
We're Americans, damn it. We love freedom.
Yeah.
Why are we fighting against freedom every chance we get?
He did a great speech
the other day at the NoCo Hemp Expo in Colorado. And, you know, just a very well-versed politician who understands how to play the game. But at the end of the day, we're talking about freedom. Why would it make a marijuana licensee happy if the hemp industry is more licensed? Why wouldn't you want less restrictions on you and more sales outlets. That's the time to push for this, because that's what they have, not make it harder on them. It doesn't make sense.
Because they're on that stone and they want to keep everybody else off of it. They're on that
Yeah, but that's
stone.
Never worked in the history of mankind. If you were think if you were the beta cassette person back in the day, that was your stone. How'd that work for those guys?
No, I think about this subject a lot, because I was one. I mean, I've received a tremendous education over the last 12 years in this industry, and one of them has been about the importance of economic freedom, opportunity, hopes, and dreams. Whether you're an entrepreneur, capitalist, or labor-oriented person, you need an environment, you need a structure, you need a market where people can take their hopes and dreams and rise up. This kind of stuff really matters, and it's going to exist 500 years beyond our existence.
You know, this is a good point, Dimitri. Sorry, you know, I'm excited to be sitting beside you guys, because I wanted to know what Bob thought. This is like last week. I was saying to myself, I wonder what Bob thought about Trump winning. So I was reading in the papers that Biden is falling behind. The latest polling shows that he may not make it. So I was just curious if Bob would entertain a hypothetical of what would the industry look like in a second Trump regime.
That's a great question. Of course, I'd entertain that. First of all, let me say this. Trump beating Hillary Clinton really did, in many ways, save this industry. Hillary Clinton had pledged to go to Schedule 2. Schedule 2 was a death sentence for this industry and paved the way, though, that these compounds could only be used in the pharmaceutical sector. Schedule 3 sounds and feels that way, but if you look at the language on Schedule 3, it does not require a physician, and it does not require a prescription. It requires something called a practitioner
and
something called an order. So, and there are examples of how these kind of products are distributed and fully compliant within that system outside of Schedule 1 and Schedule 2. So there's that. But also, the Democrats are focused on social justice, an important topic. The Republicans always sort of push for the business side of things. They're the ones that have, like the Nancy Maces of the world, et cetera, and they're few and far between. But I think Trump has already said that in his last administration that he's a supporter of medical cannabis. If it's Schedule 3, then, by the way, how are you going to have adult use compliance in a Schedule 3 environment? You get 280E relief, and you get the rest of the world sees that the U.S. government is saying this plant is not as harmful as it once was or thought to be, but you don't have anything that fits an adult use system. So the states should be thinking right now, how do I roll back to an adult use system with a severe pain catch-all, which is a Trojan horse or a quasi-adult use marketplace? The taxes are less, which reduces the burden on the marketplace. You use the existing infrastructure, and you call everything a medical dispensary again. And you still get to go in, because I went to the doctor and told the doctor that I have migraines or bad back pain, and I could document that, and I get my medical card. And I pay 6% taxes, not 26% taxes. This system is broken. The deal needs to be renegotiated, the deal of overtax and overregulate, and there needs to be a balance, and that's what the industry should be focused on right now. And I do think that while Trump might hire some Sessions-like person and put them in an AG role, that's always a risk.
Sessions wanted to bring back the death penalty for cannabis traffickers. Yes. That's freaking crazy. Go ahead.
I'm just saying, I think business prevails with that type of leadership. The question is, how does he cut a deal with the evangelicals and that extreme Christian right part of the Republican Party to make this happen? Because you don't want to force legalization nationally down everyone's throat. You want to give states the option, in my opinion, much like the way the Farm Bill gives them the option to legalize industrial hemp.
Yep, absolutely.
So I'm here in Babin, in case you don't, Florida, well-known Florida figure taking a photo.
Okay.
This just reminds me how complicated the world is going to be to navigate, no matter what.
Yeah. Yeah.
No matter who wins the presidency, things are going to evolve in ways that are quite uncertain.
Yeah,
will you be available for people on that subject matter?
100%. The easiest way to find me these days, and I'm trying my. You know what did Michael Corleone say? Every time I get out, they try to pull me back in.
Yes.
The easiest way to find me is my website, bobhoban.com. Bob@bobhoban.com is my email. I still work with Clark Hill. I still am I'm doing some consulting projects and working in those spaces I talked about earlier, and always available to take a call if someone's of interest and really to shed some light. But I need time to get this book done because I've got it all sketched out, and it is going to be replete with just wonderful stories of all of the people we've met over the years. Because they're such great characters, they're such driven people, people that cashed everything in, people that gave up everything, not just for the plant, although that's what drove them here, but because of the entrepreneurial opportunity. That's America in a nutshell. I love that stuff, and I want to tell those stories, and I'm just proud to work side by side, or at least in the middle, of all these people doing all these things, and they continue to do these things. But as you can see here, there's a lot of new faces.
There
and
are.
Guess what? They all seem to be experts.
Bob, what's your book going to be called? Bob, give us the title of your book.
The book, well, my preferred title is called Cansigliere.
Cansigliere, we love it. That's fun. That's
but
exactly
we'll see
where
the
are.
Publisher goes with it.
Don't take the title of my book, The Canterbury Tales. That's going to be my book.
You know what mine's called?
I agree.
That's a great
mine's
one.
Called Highly Capitalized, and it is going to be a memoir.
That's a good one.
Look,
that's
a good one. We try to keep these short, but Bob, you're invited back anytime. We should probably do. I'm an intellectually arrogant motherfucker, like all human beings are, but I do know to step aside and give high praise. I appreciate you being
yeah,
here.
Bob, you paid
you
your dues.
So
you paid
smart,
your dues.
So wise, so on top of this. If you decide to start a firm that's helping people navigate this framework of into federal legalization, whatever happens, I'll come join.
Let's you do know, it. That, Let's some, do it.
That might be enough of an issue to start an independent company around, although most people just call their lawyer, you know, but the lawyer will probably call you.
or at least read something I wrote. Well, listen, I would love to work side by side with you guys somehow at MJ BizCon at the end of the year and, you know, do some interviews together and just check in. But right now, just trying to lay low. I was on a long trek in Peru, just getting outside, climbing through mountains, getting out and enjoying myself, trying to enjoy some sunny weather, and not be married to the almighty billable hour as us lawyers been for so long.
Well, enjoy your time off.
Yeah, enjoy your
you
time
will
off.
Get dragged back in, if nothing else, to another Meet Unshackled next time we run into you at a conference, and hopefully you'll be carrying your book around.
I will.
Yeah.
And,
sure
we appreciate the time you joined. Listen, thank you for co-hosting.
Oh, we're gonna have thank
to,
you.
We're gonna have to, you're going to have to join us more.
Absolutely. If you've got Bob Hoban, I'll be here.
Thank
awesome.
You.
This is another episode of Meet Unshackled. We're here at Benzinga. We'll be back with more fantastic individuals.